Welcome to Causal Bandits Extra.
Darko, you started Causal Lens around 2017. Causality back then was a very niche topic. I remember myself.
Extremely niche.
Yeah. How was the experience?
It felt very lonely. We're now so excited to have this community that is growing at an exponential rate. But when we started, it was very, very lonely.
Mm-hmm.
But from the first day, we felt that this is going to be big one day. And we just wanted to make sure that we lay those foundations. So when the time comes, like 2023, and the community is growing exponentially, we can support the community with cool success stories in the real world. But it was, to answer your question, very lonely at the beginning. It was a handful of people.
What made you take this route?
It was a contrarian bet. It was a contrarian bet.
Is it related? A part of your story is related to hedge funds.
That's right. Yeah. So I was in hedge funds before starting Causal Lens. Same for my co-founder Max. He was also in the hedge fund world.
He's a physicist, right?
He's a physicist. Yes. Mm-hmm. So obviously, I'm a computer scientist. Yeah. And at the time, I remember reading an FT, Financial Times article, about AlphaGo beating the world champion at the game of Go.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody was getting extremely excited about deep learning at the time. So everybody was pivoting all of their AI research towards deep learning. They're like, okay, deep learning is going to solve everything.
Mm-hmm.
And Max and I had a very contrarian view. We felt deep learning is great in certain situations. And, you know, if it's a board game and there's fixed rules, then, you know, that's great. But in the real world, we knew that it's just learning historical patterns can get you into trouble. And we've both observed this working in the hedge fund world where just using correlations, you know, the past almost never repeats in financial markets.
Mm-hmm.
So we also knew, the other thing we learned from hedge funds is that the way to win big is to take a contrarian view.
Mm-hmm.
If you do what everybody else is doing, you get paid a little bit, but not a lot. The time when you get paid a lot is when you do something completely different from everybody else. And you're right. Of course, you need to, you know, you can't just be contrarian. You need to be contrarian and right. Luckily for us, Causal AI was a contrarian bet that was right. And is becoming more right by the day.
So it sounds like you took two things from the experience that you gained in the hedge fund environment. One was regarding the nature of the patterns.
That's right.
And the lesson that in the real world, the pattern might change rapidly.
That's
and learning
right.
the future is not necessarily
That's
predictive
right.
of... The past is not necessarily
yeah.
predictive of the future.
Yeah.
And the second one was regarding taking a bet
yeah.
on something. So this is a lesson from...
That's right. From Those are the two key lessons. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, that's very interesting. What made you go into causality from the point of view of your in the context of your career? So you studied computer science.
That's right. Yeah. So when I was doing my PhD, it was in computer vision. It was in biometrics, so recognizing things at a distance with cameras and things like that. And we had tried many, many approaches there. We tried deep learning. We tried model-based approaches. What we learned was that in the lab, deep learning worked really well because the background was the same. Everything was the same. So just throwing a lot, the more data we threw, the better the deep learning became.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as soon as we took out the deep learning in the real world, it all broke down. And we were trying to understand, you know, how can this be? Like, we have incredible performance in the lab. As soon as we take it out in the real world, it just breaks down like catastrophically. It's not like small deterioration of performance. It just broke down.
Mm-hmm.
So then we decided to try something else. We decided to take a model-based approach to learning. So say you can learn the the features of the human body, how the torso moves, how the arms move, how the legs move, or if you're doing face recognition, you can learn kind of a 3D shape of the head, and you can say, well, the eyes have to like belong in this part of the model. They can't be, you know, where the ears are and so on. And we realized that the model-based approach had slightly worse performance in the lab, but when we took it out in the real world, it retained its performance. So that was
generalizing better.
It was generalizing so much better that it was just not comparable. And that's really the other motivation for me for causality, is that if you don't have a model and if you don't really understand the cause and effect mechanisms, you can do really well in the lab, but you're not going to do really well in the real world. And I think we've seen that in the enterprise today, about 85 to 90%, depending on which statistic you read, of the projects never make it outside the lab. And this is fundamentally the reason for it, is that you get incredible results in the lab, but as soon as you take them out in the field, they either fail to deliver, or the humans that are going to use those algorithms and those applications do not trust it, because they don't understand what is the causal model behind it, or what is the model behind it. And so I think to be able to take AI from the lab to the real world, we need to solve two things. We need to solve one, you know, will this thing work in the real world? And second, will the humans using it trust it? And will they understand how it works? So those are the two fundamental things that causality helps us achieve.
When you look at your clients, your customers, what are the main use cases where people apply causal models? And when they give you feedback, what aspects of those causal models do you focus on? What is important to you?
Absolutely. I'll give you a concrete example with one of our most recent clients. It's a really cool use case. It's around modeling a physical system. So think of it as could be a manufacturing process, could be a device that fits into a machine, something that has a true reality to it, like a cause and effect mechanism in the real world. So if you think of like a manufacturing line, there is a cause and effect transmission, because there's like real parts connected to real parts. You know, maybe you have some sort of cog here, another cog here, there may be a kind of a chain that connects the two. So there is like a real world causal link between one part of the process to another part. There's like a chain that connects them. It's like truly, truly causal, right? This thing causes this other thing. There's no question about it. So what they did is they tried to solve this problem themselves with deep learning first. They threw a lot of data at the problem. They kept doing it and it worked really well in the lab. But as soon as they took it out, it just failed catastrophically, because you know, the real world was different from the data they had collected in the lab. Then they tried to work with six companies that do deep learning. They thought, okay, maybe it's us. Maybe we don't know how to fit a model. Let's try with get external help. They went through six companies. They got to a point where they improved the performance, but their senior leadership did not understand how this thing works, and they were not able to explain like the real world connectivity in this machine, right? There's like this cog moving here causes this other cog to move here. They're not able to explain it. So they decided to abandon AI altogether. They're like, this is not gonna work. And so one of their data scientists came across causality and came across causal AI and us, and they decided to give it one last chance. We started doing causal discovery, so automated causal discovery on the data. We discovered essentially kind of a digital twin of the machine. And then we were able to say, let's now give this proposed causal diagram to your domain experts, so people that really understand the ins and outs of this machine. the humans looked at this causal diagram and said, it's mostly right. There are a few things that are not quite right. Mm-hmm. This cog here is not really connected to this cog here. Therefore, there's not really a causal relationship. But because we never had a fault in this part of the machine, mm-hmm. your algorithm hasn't detected a causal link. Mm-hmm. So they were able to actually insert that causal link themselves.
So your causal discovery process is an iterative process where humans are also involved.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Humans are actually there before the models even get built. And that's mm-hmm. fundamentally different from deep learning and generative AI, where you just throw a lot of data and you have a model and then, you know, good luck kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Whereas here, we have the human involved from the very beginning.
How many steps do you usually plan in a process like this? So you yeah. start with expert knowledge, then you push this expert knowledge to the yeah. to the algorithm, then the algorithm or algorithms, as I suppose, yeah. return some results, and then you again consult the experts. Is that the process?
It's usually
knowledge?
Two or three rounds. Doesn't take mm-hmm. too long. And then, you know, we build the causal model.
When you were a child,
yeah,
was there anything, any thoughts or any ideas that you could connect to what you're doing today?
Yeah, good question. I think there was definitely no, I wasn't thinking too much about causal AI when I was a child, but I was very passionate about doing things, building stuff in general that have a positive impact. So my first entrepreneurial venture was when I was maybe 6 or 7, I guess, first or second year at school. My cousin was doing electronics at university, and he was building this device that had like an ultrasound that was supposedly chasing mosquitoes. Mm-hmm. And this particular summer was pretty bad with mosquitoes. So I decided to learn how to do soldering and just build a bunch of these devices. And so then
he gave you like a blueprint.
It was he gave me the blueprint. So I didn't invent the device, but he had all the parts. I was like, how can I get 20x the parts so I can build 20 of these? And he's like, I don't know, I mean, I can bring you some transistors and resistors and LEDs from the lab, and you can build if you like, but why do you want to do that? I was like, well, you know, everybody at school was complaining about insect bites, so maybe I could build something to help them. Mm-hmm. And maybe, you know, I can increase my pocket money in the same time. So I built 20 of these things, and I took them to... I built one first, you know, an MVP to test the market. I went to school and I was able to sell it in the first 10 minutes of showing it. So I decided to, you know, and everybody was like wanted to see it. So I thought, okay, I took some pre-orders and decided to build 20 for the whole class. And my entrepreneurial lesson there from this experiment was that you need to also worry about payment terms and discuss those things before giving the product away. So I ended up with, you know, substantial lack of payment. But it doesn't matter. The whole class now had less in insect bites. So it was still worthwhile trying. But I did learn a lesson there that, you know, building product is important, but making sure that there's a way to get paid for it is equally important.
What was your next step after that?
Yeah, so after that, I got hooked. I was like, this is so cool. You can, like, sit at home, build something that people want, mm-hmm. you can go then and help people have a better life. So one example there just inspired me. And I was just wondering, like, how can I now do this at scale? So since I was 6 or 7, I was just looking for the way to make an impact. And obviously, you know, I was growing up at a time when the internet became a thing, and programming became a thing. So I remember I still didn't have a computer. It was maybe 1995 or something like that. One of my cousin's friends was working for a US company coding, and I was like, okay, what is this thing, coding? And so he said, look, I can just give you my book, and all you need to do is learn this book. And obviously he was massively simplifying it for a young child, but it's like, if you learn this book, it's going to open up a whole new world of software that is going to change the world. So effectively, I think that was kind of the inspiration to go into software. So I spent a whole summer learning Pascal and Delphi. And I was like, wow, this is actually so much faster than building and soldering stuff. Mm-hmm. Once you build one of these things, you can multiply it by infinite amount. Mm-hmm. So I thought this is the vehicle to really make an impact on the world. Mm-hmm. Software.
Dako, you mentioned your cousin. It seems like he was an important person in your life.
Very, very important. Yeah, it just highlights the role of role models when you're in your formative years of childhood. Just being surrounded by someone that was building electronics and software was you know, truly change the direction for me for life. Mm-hmm. It was really, really formative.
What would be your advice to people who are starting with something? Maybe people who are just starting with causality, and then they might feel a little bit overwhelmed with all the tooling, all the terminology.
Yeah.
And they might feel a little bit unsure if they can really make it. What would be your advice to them?
First of all, you should be confident that you will definitely make it. Causal AI is now actually accessible. We have books, we have open source packages. It's in a so much better state than we started a company with Max in 2017. So first I would say, read a book of why. It's incredibly important from a foundational perspective. So kind of the theory, to learn the causal theory. And that will help you understand all of the buzzwords in causality. That one book, read it twice if necessary, but that book will be really formative for you. Then the second thing you can do is play around with open source tooling. There's lots of cool stuff coming out. New open source causal packages are popping up, and there's really great examples. We hope to help the community in the future by open sourcing some of our cool algorithms. We also hope to make our enterprise platform free, either community version or free to try, which will make that journey even easier. And we're working very hard to make that happen, kind of unifying the interfaces. So using similar calls for all the algorithms from all the different kind of creators. Just the book of why and the open source stuff that is currently available. And you have great blogs as well.
Thank you.
So read Alex's blogs. That's really, really, really cool as well. But I think, we also will prepare a lot more for the data science community. Come to our conference. We're organizing the Causal AI conference. It's a community event. We do it for the community. We don't do any selling, no marketing. And next year we will be, somewhere in the US or the UK. We'll see. But please come to that. That will be also a great opportunity to learn about how to get started.
Dako, some people say that that generative AI is the future. We repeatedly said today in the conversation that that you believe, share this belief with you, that causal AI or causal thinking is also something that will play an important role in development of intelligent systems, decision-making systems in the future. What are your thoughts about when you look at those both ideas, generative ideas and causal ideas, how do you see them developing further in the future?
Gen AI is amazing for certain things, and causal AI is really amazing with other things. So the point is that when you combine these technologies together, 1 + 1 = 3. And we therefore see a huge potential, and quite an unexploited potential, actually, to combine these two technologies together. And we will need other building blocks as well. I think Gen AI and causal AI are great building blocks, but we'll need a few more. And we may not know what exactly those are today.
What would be your guesses regarding those building blocks? What might we be missing today?
Yeah, that's a question I think a lot about, but I don't think, if I'm entirely honest, I don't think I have the answer. Mm-hmm. Because the way I think about, we don't fully understand, it's the unknown unknowns, I guess. Mm-hmm. And we will need to write a new theory, kind of how we wrote the causal AI theory. And I think we'll be at the moment in the future again where we'll need to, when we realize that Gen AI and causal AI put together, it is three, but we need a few more points to get to AGI. And I think we first need to take this first step of combining these two technologies and realizing where there is a gap. I think we just have to do that hard work and research to figure that out before we realize that there's a gap. And my gut feel is there will be still a gap that we then need to come up with new theory, new research to fill that gap. Mm-hmm. But just to be clear, I think just using causal AI and Gen AI, we can get so far. There's a lack of harmonization of the packages, so we think that an interface that will unify, say, all of the causal discovery packages working in the same way, all the causal modeling packages working in the same way, all the decision intelligence engines working in a similar way, I think that's a big gap, and it's natural part of the evolution, but we need to get there. We need to be like sklearn, and we need to have the equivalent of causal packages to do that.
We are missing, what you're saying is that we are missing the unification that sklearn offers or Keras brought to the community.
That's a big gap for us, and we actually will help the community by open sourcing our interfaces to help achieve this. And we hope that the community will adopt this to help us unify and be, for us to have a serious chance at adoption, we need to do this.
Darko, it was a pleasure.
Let's have some natas.
I'm ready to celebrate our conversation. Look at this beauty.